slowly. "Are you thinking?" I ask her.
"Yes, it's difficult."
"It can't be that difficult."
"Then do you have anything?"
She shoots back. "You love animals," I tell her, "and I don't hate them." She slices a piece of cheese and lands her eyes on me.
"I've heard you call Walrus a little bastard about 30 times.
"With affection," I say. She pops the slice of cheese in her mouth.
"So we have two things in common. With my calculations, we should have enough commonalities to be friends in about 564 years.
She reaches for her beer, and I don't know what to say without putting my foot in my mouth. I don't want to give up on this, but I feel the air tensing around us. Awkward silence piling on. I tap my thumb ring on the kitchen counter to fill the quiet. She watches me for a second before popping the cap of her beer on the side of the counter.
"You're supposed to disagree with that,"
she says casually, placing the beer to her lips. I stop tapping my ring. "With the 564 thing?"
"Yeah."
She nods and motions the bottle to me.
"You're supposed to say no, Jane. We'll be friends in a couple years."
"I don't have a fucking crystal ball," I say.
"Okay, then just tell me I'm wrong."
"You're wrong," I say, "because skeletons aren't making friends in their graves."
"Wow."
She shakes her head. "Wow what? I can't say the right things, and correcting course is just driving myself further into a ditch."
"Wow, you want to be my friend, but you can't even have any confidence that it will happen,"
she says.
"Not in 500 years, not in 2 years, how about ever?"
"I have confidence in myself, but friendship is a two-way street," I reply. Her brows furrow.
"So you think I'm the one not trying?"
"Fucking hell. You're right," I say. "This is difficult."
"Agreed."
Something nags at me, and it's not going to bring us any closer since it's about Maximoff. I scratch my jaw. "So Maximoff doesn't have a license anymore," I say. "I thought the only reason you didn't ride together was because of his driving."
"It was,"
she replies. I pick up on the past tense. "But it's not anymore?"
"You two don't get much time alone,"
she shrugs. I want to tell her not to worry about that, to do what she'd normally do if I wasn't around, but fuck. I love my one-on-one time with Maximoff, and those car rides are a big part of it. No piece of me wants to give that up just to be nice. My earpiece buzzes. "A car at a Faro," Akara says through the mic. "We're driving into the garage now. Are the doors unlocked?" I step back from Jane, realizing that this conversation went from pleasant to painful in a matter of minutes. And honestly, it's not her. I don't even know if it's me. It's just this intangible, unquantifiable thing.
23. Maximoff Hale. "I don't think I brought enough chips," Sully says in my kitchen beside me. The two of us fix a plate of food for everyone. She inspects the Tostitos. "What was I thinking? One fucking bag. Akara can eat a whole bag by himself, and why did I bring donuts? No one likes midnight donuts but me." "Hey." I place two hands on her broad swimmer's shoulders. She's long-legged and long-armed, and barefoot she's 6 feet tall. Only a couple inches shorter than me, and we're almost eye level. We look like brother and sister, not just cousins. Our moms are sisters, we share their green eyes. Our dads are half-brothers. We share our grandfather's dark brown hair, if I didn't dye mine. So you know Sullivan Minnie Meadows is the foul-mouthed, ultra-focused Olympian who returned home with 4 gold medals last summer. In 200 and 400 meter freestyle and individual medley, you're angry that she just retired from swimming, but some of you are too excited about the idea of Sullivan starting to date to seriously care. I've seen your tweets about her virginity. Back off. And me? I know her as Sully. My 19-year-old cousin who jokes crudely, loves wildly, and can outrace me on foot or water every single time. I love her like a little sister. And she has no brothers of her own. Fair warning. I'll rip each lung out of your rib cage and grind them in a rusted meat processor if you fuck with her. Don't stress, I say, clutching her shoulders. One bag of chips is fine. And when have you ever cared if no one else likes donuts?
It's our first Hallow Friends Eve.
I get it. Halloween is more of my dad's birthday and a giant costume get-together. Family only. Jane and Sully have been trying to figure out a day before Halloween tradition for years that doesn't include our parents or the little kids. Hence, Hallow Friends Eve. Of our cousins and siblings, we decided to only invite those who've already graduated high school. Charlie never RSVP'd. Fucking typical. And his twin brother Beckett just became a principal dancer at a prestigious ballet company. He'd be here for Sully, his best friend, but he has a performance tonight. That just leaves Jane, Sully, and me.
And it's my first time hosting a party, Sully reminds me. It has to be perfect.
She inflicts pressure on herself all the time. Whenever Sullivan has a goal, in her mind, it's her job to go for gold. Co-hosting, I correct, dropping my hands. It's my house. Anything goes wrong, you can blame me. I pour her chips in an orange plastic bowl. Sully snorts.
That's not how this works. You can't fall on a sword for me, Moff.
Quietly, she adds,
and I don't want this to be the worst party our bodyguards have ever been invited to.
My brows scrunch. Who are you trying to impress? It's just Akara, Quinn, and Pharaoh. We invited them as friends, off duty. We're all staying in our townhouse all night and watching a horror movie. They can drink alcohol, but they need to crash here. We push the love seat against the kitchen's archway, so we have to hurdle the furniture to reach the living room, where we set up beanbags and sleeping bags. Like Jane, Sully is already wearing her pajamas, cupcake boxer shorts, and a turquoise tank.
I'm trying to impress all three of them, Sully whispers. I've heard them talk shit about your pool party circa... How old were you?
18. And that mosquito infestation was not my fucking fault. We were outside, where bugs live. Naturally.
Hey, I'm not the one ragging on you, Sully says. I totally agree, it's nature's fucking fault. Not the watermelon that you cut in half.
I scowl. You're right. They're annoying. Why'd we invite them anyway? I'm half serious, half sarcastic. Even though I spend 24/7 with Pharaoh, this'll be the first time he's technically off duty around me. And he just loves his technicalities.
If we didn't invite them, Sully says, then we'd have to call this Hallow Family Eve because the three of us don't have friends, other than the people we pay to protect us.
Jesus, we're so sad, I say, sarcasm thick. Sully smiles.
The fucking saddest.
She grips a beer by the neck and casually takes a small sip. She cringes, nose wrinkling, not enjoying the bitter taste. Her dark hair is parted in the center, splayed in waves over her broad shoulders. Sully casts a glance to the living room. Over the love seat, I spot Jane entertaining Quinn, Akara, and Pharaoh with some elaborate story. Gesticulating madly, lemonade mixed drink in her hand.
She's so good at that,
Sully says, wistful.
Half the time, I don't know what the fuck to say to people.
It's a kobold thing, I remind Sully. They have a harder time knowing when to shut up. She exchanges a smile with me. We love our seven kobold cousins. Our best friends are kobolds, Beckett for her, Janie for me. But it's undeniable how different we are from them. She nods and takes a larger swig of beer. Trying not to make a disgusted face, she succeeds. Then, in a different language, she asks,
Has pensado en la ultra?
Have you thought about the ultra? Reich Meadows taught his daughters to speak Spanish, and he taught me. I'm proud to be fluent, but in the past year, being constantly compared to Reich, I don't know. I question everything.
Mafi?
Sully nudges my ribs, waking me from a stupor. The ultra. I grab a water bottle from the hard-shell cooler on the ground, thinking. Sully retired from swimming because she completed her goal. She went to the Olympics. She medaled. And she could have returned to the next Summer Olympics, but she didn't want to go after more of the same. So she set her sights on doing an ultra-marathon in Chile, the Atacama Crossing, a 155-mile race in the desert. It's her next goal, her next fight for first, and she wants me by her side. Swimming and running go hand in hand. We used to condition on land by doing endurance runs together, and I'd love to make time for an ultra. If she asked me a year ago, I wouldn't have hesitated like I do now.
It's because my dad ran an ultra, isn't it?
Sol, I rub my sharpened jaw. If I go, they'll compare me more to your dad than they do now. Sully tears at the label on her beer.
Look, I know you're not my brother. I didn't mean it like that. God damn it. Oh, hey, I know. I'm fucking terrible with words.
She takes a giant breath, not giving up yet. Sully rarely gives up on anything.
Hear me out. We started competitive swimming together, and in the grand universe of friendship and fate, maybe we should start this together too.
She pauses.
And I just can't fucking imagine doing this alone. So think about it, will you?
I nod. For you, I will. Sully puts her lips to the beer rim and catches me eagle-eyeing the alcohol. She lowers the bottle.
You can stop looking at me like I've sprouted wings.
Actually, I'm looking at you like you're cradling a lit firework.
I know what I'm doing, Muffy.
She tries to reassure me. Our grandfather was an alcoholic. My dad is a recovering alcoholic. Her dad chose to stop drinking alcohol at 17. Alcoholism runs in the Hale and Meadows bloodlines. Just because I decided to never drink alcohol doesn't mean my siblings or cousins will choose the same. Just be careful. I dump pretzels in another bowl. Sully doesn't say, I always am. Adventure and fearlessness also run deep in her blood. As a Meadows, she grew up cliff jumping into tropical oceans, riding Ducatis, and paragliding hundreds of feet in the air. Instead, she tells me,
I know the risk.
Sully reaches for a bakery box that contains a dozen chocolate-covered donuts. We carry the assortment of food, pretzels, chips, buffalo poppers, Halloween candy, and a veggie tray. And we skillfully climb over the love seat without spilling anything. Akara, Quinn, and Pharaoh lounge on beanbags, radios set aside. So they're seriously off duty. They face the fireplace, television mounted above the mantel. I set the food on a green sleeping bag in the middle, and Janie yanks the cord to the ceiling light, blanketing us in near darkness. Pharaoh leans on a black beanbag, nearest the staircase, more off on his own damn island. Akara, Quinn, and even Janie, who plops down near the food, are clustered much closer together. Pharaoh swigs a beer, eyes dead set on me. He's wondering what my next move is. So am I. I'm dying to sit beside him. But what kind of message is that sending to everyone else? Hey, I'm fucking my bodyguard. Or, hey, I'm just good friends with my bodyguard. All right, the first one sounds like pure paranoia with a dash of overreacting. Before I step towards Pharaoh, Sully places donuts next to the chips and curses.
Come, Buckets.
What? I ask.
I forgot the salsa.
She rests two fingers to her lips, the famous Sullivan Meadows concentration phase. And she's using it for a salsa crisis. Sully, I snap. It's fine.
Do you have anything in your fridge? I could make some.
She can't offer to make a grocery run since that'd entail needing a sober Akara Kitsuan. Forget the salsa, Sully.
Uncle Lo says it's not a party until there's salsa. It's a party rule, right?
She looks to Jane.
Well,
Jane muses the idea for too long. I cut in. My dad could also eat 5 hot sauce packets for brunch and nothing else. Famous ones, Pharaoh calls out, and our heads turn to him. There's no salsa rule for parties. Not normal. Christ, the fact that we needed clarification from Pharaoh makes me pinch my eyes and groan. He smiles wide into his swig of beer. Come here, Sol. Akara waves her to sit on the green beanbag beside him, the bowl of chips on his lap. Sitting, she holds her legs to her chest but leans towards him. These are perfectly fine without salsa. He demonstrates and tosses a corn chip in his mouth. Delicious.
You're just saying that,
Sully refutes.
Am not.
Akara playfully pulls the bowl against his chest.
These are mine now. Thanks.
She smiles bright and then tries to grab a chip. He hoists the bowl over her head, teasing.
Teasing?
I dazedly walk over to Pharaoh, not taking my gaze off that exchange, and I sink down next to him.
What's up with that?
I whisper to him. It's called a buddy guard, Wolf Scout. I've heard security use the term before. Buddy guard, noun. One who protects a very important person while also being their close friend. I've known that Akara understands everything about Sully, her habits, her likes and dislikes. I just never really honed in on their friendship until... until I started fucking my bodyguard. Great. Is my perception of every bodyguard-client relationship going to skew on the side of they're copulating now? My mind is a rabbit hole that I didn't ask to fall into.
Lean back,
Pharaoh says, sipping his beer. I do, and we're shoulder to shoulder. But my narrowed eyes remain plastered on my cousin and her bodyguard. I lower my voice, ensuring only Pharaoh can hear.
Do they look super close to you? More than a bodyguard?
No. He sips his beer. At total ease right now. I observe my cousin. She shoves Akara's carved bicep, laughing as he hides the bowl behind his back. I grimace.
Are they flirting?
I try not to even touch my mixed feelings. I'm a hypocrite if I dislike the mere idea of Sully with her bodyguard, but some part of me tramples through the Hulk smash Akara territory. You sure? Pharaoh turns his head to whisper in my ear. I've known Akara a long time, and he'd never cross that line with Sully. He's a security lead. He's too professional, and he knows Reich Meadows would kill him. My dad will kill you. My jaw tenses, and he must sense my sudden thought. He whispers up against my ear again. If your dad scared me, I wouldn't have kissed you. That reminds me, I haven't regretted crossing a line with Pharaoh. Not once. My shoulders lower a fraction, and Pharaoh bites into an English muffin, sandwiched with egg, bacon, and cheese, which he made at his townhouse after showering and brought it here, even though we bought snacks for tonight. His love of breakfast foods has no bounds. Pharaoh will literally order sunny-side-up eggs and sausage 7 days in a row for every meal. Pharaoh extends the half-bitten sandwich to me. I thought you don't share. He licks his thumb, lips lifting. I share with you only. I grab the sandwich. Because I'm your client. Try again. Because I'm your... You tell me. Are we labeling this relationship? I don't know. This is my first relationship. When do the labels come? Maybe Pharaoh has like a 6-month minimum before he considers a person his... I watch him survey the room out of his peripheral. Pharaoh being subtly alert of our surroundings, I love. I'm more obvious, staring straight on. Janie uses the remote to find a horror movie on Netflix. Akara and Sully are chatting quietly, and she's stacking chips on a donut. Quinn plays with Ophelia, the white cat scurrying beneath his muscular legs. Maximoff. Pharaoh captures my gaze. He stops himself from speaking more, and I can't feel disappointed, because I know he sees someone watching us. He stares straight ahead at the television. I take a bite of his food before handing the sandwich back. Then I unscrew my water bottle and swig.
What the hell is up with this one?
Quinn frowns at a calico kitten pawing at his ankle.
It hates you, Oliveira, Pharaoh says into a swig of beer.
He?
Janie corrects Pharaoh with a pointed look. When she sees me watching, she forces a smile like,
We're friends, don't worry, Moffy. Did that convince anyone?
Wallpaper? Lamp? Table? Man on the moon? You all fucking convinced?
Me neither.
What?
Quinn says to Pharaoh, seeming genuinely upset at that idea.
He doesn't hate me. I'm great with animals. Before I boxed pro, I could have been a dog whisperer.
He clucks his tongue at the kitten and makes a cooing noise. Solo cup in hand, Akara leans towards Quinn.
Hey, you do know that's a cat, not a dog.
Quinn laughs with all of us. I've never seen any metaphorical jab knock him down. He sips his rum and fizz.
I had a dog growing up.
What kind?
Sully asks, and Janie lands on A Nightmare on Elm Street and mouths to me and Pharaoh.
Yes or no?
I give her a thumbs up. Pharaoh purposefully puts his thumb down. I write up his fucking thumb. He wears a self-satisfied expression like I just agreed to jerk him off. Not equivalent, but I am giving him a hell of a lot of attention, and he's making me aware of that. Quinn replies to my cousin.
I had a husky. I had a husky too,
Sully says, and the room goes quiet. To Quinn, my cousin adds,
She died a while back.
Yeah, I know. I saw on...
Quinn trails off and clears his throat.
Twitter,
Pharaoh says. More confidently, Quinn tells Sully.
It was actually Facebook.
If the Meadows had a fifth family member, it wouldn't be me.
It'd be Coconut the Husky.
You loved that dog. I loved that damn dog.
And we were all sad when she finally passed from old age. Quinn tries to pet the calico kitten and he bites his finger.
Jane? Carpenter likes vegetables. Just toss him one of those baby tomatoes.
Quinn stretches towards the veggie tray and then throws a tomato beneath the love seat. Carpenter dashes after it. He shakes his head.
That's not natural.
Akara motions his cup to the television.
Are we still doing the drinking game?
Yeah,
Sully nods repeatedly.
Jane has the rules.
Right.
Jane is busy smashing her beanbag. She's usually next to me during these kinds of things, and she's sort of off in a corner.
Janie,
I call out and motion her closer. She mouths no and casts the briefest glance at Pharaoh, like she needs to give us privacy. It's not like we're about to exchange secret handjobs in the fucking dark. I'm in a room with two of my cousins. Not happening.
Jane, Pharaoh calls before I have to prod further.
She hesitates for 1 second before dragging her pink beanbag near us. She plops a few feet from me. I reach over and slide her and the beanbag right by my side. Jane can't hide her smile.
Hallow Friends Eve's drinking game rules, she announces to the group. Take a sip from your drink every time Freddy Krueger appears, someone screams, and when someone says the word nightmare, dream, or sleep.
What about Muffy?
Sully asks.
I'm not playing.
You can't not play,
Jane replies.
And you know I'm dreadfully serious when I use a double negative.
Sully bites into a donut and with a full mouth says,
Uncle Lo and my dad always have alternative rules for sober players.
Janie perks up.
Take off an article of clothing every time someone screams.
Si nous passe une bonne idée.
I say in French so only Jane can understand. That's not a good idea. Yeah, I came already today, and I can will away an erection by sheer mental concentration, but not if I'm stripping beside Pharaoh. Look, there are some things that can't be easily hidden. My huge rock-hard cock is one of them. Everyone is staring at me but Pharaoh. He edges away from me, and then he leaves to the kitchen with his empty beer bottle. Jane says,
Je n'ai pas d'autre idée que celle-ci.
I have no other idea but this one. I glance at Sully and remember her trepidation about the party failing. I don't want to disappoint my cousin over a boner. I shut my eyes in a long blink, trying to scrub away that last bizarre thought. All right, I say, eyes open. Every other scream, I'll take off an article of clothing, but I stop before my underwear. The room agrees, and Pharaoh returns with a new pale ale and one of Janie's pastel blue blankets. He tosses the blanket to me and sinks back down. Just as close as before, shoulder to shoulder, his presence is a furnace boiling me from head to toe. Don't get caught. How's that mantra? If I repeat it over and over, I should be able to avoid an erection. Definitely. Don't get fucking caught. Janie presses play, and about 10 minutes into the movie, Pharaoh calls out,
Akara, are you on the clock or do you just love Jane's decor?
He must have been surveying the room. An actress suddenly shrieks. Everyone drinks, and I pull my shirt off over my head and toss the thing aside. I lean back beside Pharaoh. He's trying to suppress a smile. That's rare. Jane keeps the conversation alive.
Akara, you love how I decorated this place?
I didn't say that, he says. My brother likes your decorations, Quint tells her. He calls it retro granny realness.
Janie beams.
I think it's hella fucking cute,
Sully tells her.
Thank you, Sullivan,
Janie replies.
Will you be my new bodyguard?
Of course, I'll protect you to the fucking death.
And follow me around everywhere I go?
Everywhere.
Hey, 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 Quinn cuts in, extending his arm towards Sully. Don't take my job, it's not for sale.
Jane beams harder. Her last retired bodyguard never voiced his enjoyment of being on her detail.
Too bad you're not in charge of transfers, Quinn, Pharaoh tells him. Only Akara can decide that.
Sully nudges Akara's arm.
What'd you say, Kitz? Put me on Jane's detail?
Kitz. My cousin has a special nickname for her bodyguard. Off his last name, Kitsuan, but still, it's a nickname. Pharaoh has a nickname for me. 2 + 2 = Huh. My mind needs to just stop for the night. I swear I'm going to reach a new circle of hell for paranoid souls. Akara nods to Sully.
When you can beat me in the ring, you can take Jane's detail.
He sounds serious, but maybe he knows she'd never beat him. He was trained in Muay Thai since he was 6. Sully crinkles her nose.
But I'm a lover, not a fighter.
His lips quirk.
Sorry, Sul. Gotta pass on you then. You'd make a shit bodyguard.
Jane clutches her heart.
Say it isn't so.
Drink.
Pharaoh calls out as the word sleep is said on screen. The horror movie engrosses all of us for the next 20 minutes. I've seen everyone grab 3 refills. Sully is on her 6th beer. Yeah, I'm counting. and I have zero clothes left to shed. Down to my dark green boxer briefs. The blanket was a tactical maneuver by Pharaoh in case I spring a boner. I'm fine. I stopped watching him swig his beer, and my brain and Dick are cooperating with me for once. Thankfully, my phone pings a few times. I respond to my siblings, most of whom are pissed they weren't invited to Hallow Friends Eve. Kenny is the most vexed. You turd. You don't even know what horror is, Kenny. We'll do a Halloween movie night at Mom and Dad's another time, promise, I reply. She sends a skull and crossbones emoji. I don't want them around alcohol yet. Not when I'm hanging out with men in their 20s. My sister is 13. She can stay 13. And Luna, she's walking a fragile line with our parents after the tongue piercing. I'm doing her a favor by not extending an invite. Plus, if we invited Luna, we'd have to invite Jane's two brothers, Elliot Cobalt and Tom Cobalt, which would probably end with me calling the fire department or our on-call doctor. So that's pretty much why we made the high school graduates only invite stipulation. Sully. Her bodyguard's concerned voice steals my attention. He leans over my cousin and cups her cheek. Hold on. He stands and easily hurdles the love seat. Sully hugs her legs tighter to her chest, and then she rests her forehead to her kneecaps. She's dizzy. Sully, I start, about to stand, but Akara returns with a new box of donuts. Eat this. He hands Sully a plain glazed donut. You can kill your buzz with food. He pries the beer out of her fingers.
Thanks,
she mutters and lifts her head enough to grab the donut. Jane strokes her black cat, Lady Macbeth.
The first time I got drunk, I puked everywhere,
she tells Sully.
Moffy held my hair.
She rests her cheek on my shoulder. I wrap my arm around hers.
First time I got drunk, I passed out in my own piss, Quinn says. Don't ask.
Pharaoh sets aside his empty bottle. And now I'm going to. An object shatters the curtain front window, followed by quick, violent pop, 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 pop. 24. Maximov Hale. Firecrackers. Are you fucking kidding me? I launch to my feet while all three bodyguards bolt into action.
Pharaoh!
Akara yells and points to the front door, then he captures his radio off a sleeping bag.
Akara to Alpha. Akara to Alpha.
Pharaoh is already sprinting to the exit, and I'm not far behind with hot pinpointed eyes, seething inside out. Someone broke my window with the intent to harm my family. Those could have been gunshots. It's all I feel. And I see red. Pharaoh grabs the knob, but he suddenly whips around on me. He puts his hand on my bare chest, stopping me from reaching the door. Ire blisters his vigilant gaze in a way that I've never seen directed at me.
Quinn, don't near the window. There's glass on the ground,
Akara yells.
Take the girls and Moffy upstairs to the bathroom and lock the door.
My raging pulse hammers in the pit of my ears.
What the fuck are you doing?
Pharaoh sneers at me. You can't follow me. I spot the briefest flash of concern, of trepidation, before his gaze mortars hard and hot again. I clench my teeth. I need to help. I have to fucking help. The intrinsic need bangs at my head, my ribcage, my heart, and I don't know how to turn away. I don't know how to hide in a bathroom and wait.
I see him,
Quinn suddenly yells. He charges towards us, storming through Pharaoh and me to fling open the door. He runs urgently into the pitch-black night. Paparazzi, who have been camping out on my street, awaken like dormant fireflies and hornets, bright in the dark and ready to sting. Quickly, Pharaoh warns me, don't follow. Then he bolts outside, tracing Quinn's hurried footsteps. Pharaoh's caustic voice scalds my fucking ears. He's trying to protect me. It's as simple as that. My hands stay balled in fists, but I turn to find Jane and Sully to keep them safe.
Carpenter!
Jane screams bloody murder, the sound lancing my heart. Everything happens fast. She tears back downstairs and out of Sully's grasp.
Jane!
Sully yells, almost falling down the staircase after her, but Akara grabs Sully by the waist.
Kitz!
You have to stay here, Akara shouts. Jane!
Moffy! Carpenter!
Jane screams, alarmed tears already soaking her cheeks. I try to shut the door, keeping the cats inside, but she shrieks,
"He's already outside! He's outside!"
Walrus, the other kitten, darts past my ankles, and I reach to catch him, but he scampers into the night. I don't waste time. I chase the fucking animal down. Running outside, these indoor cats are her babies, and we live in the city, where cars constantly speed by. If one dies, she'll be gutted. It's all I think. All I know. I fucking run, onto the sidewalk towards the street parking. I see Walrus scampering beneath a parked car. And then I'm swarmed by paparazzi. Cameras in every fucking direction.
Carpenter!
Jane yells out, panicked. She's outside? My head swerves, squinting in the harsh flashes. I can hardly see in front of me.
Jane!
I shout and then shove paparazzi to work my way towards where I think Jane went. I spot her, wobbling and tripping over her bare feet, but determinedly chasing after another calico kitten. She's drunk. She's fucking drunk. I forgot. I'm the only sober one here.
I got him. I got him, Maximoff.
A cameraman yells at me, and then suddenly hands me Walrus. I have no time to express my full relief or gratitude. I nod once to him, and then set my entire damn attention on reaching Jane.
Let him through.
Paparazzi start yelling at one another.
Let him through.
Jane, I shout. I push through bodies. I push through voices that yell questions. I push through groping hands.
Carpenter!
She wails bloody murder. I'm barely able to see the kitten, bounding into the goddamn road, and Jane runs right after him. I body slam my way through the fucking paparazzi, being accidentally clocked in the cheek by a hefty camera. I don't stop. I can't stop. My feet hit the cement road, and with Walrus in one hand, I wrap my arm around Jane's waist the same time that she has a death clutch on her tiny calico kitten. Headlights blare at us, coming fast down our street. I rapidly steer her towards the sidewalk, and we reach the curb just in time, the car speeding past. Jane is shaking and slightly limping. She must have fallen. I try to discern where we are. I think we're 12 or 15 houses down from ours. I guide my best friend towards our townhouse.
Maximoff, why are you in your underwear at 8 at night?
Is the only question that snaps my attention, reminding me that I'm nearly fucking naked on chilly October 30th. Great. Cameras flash in fierce frenzy, and I just fixate on getting Jane home, getting us home.
Muffy,
Jane says, voice firm and wide eyes on Carpenter and only Carpenter.
He's all right. He's okay.
I don't think she even realizes Walrus escaped too, or that he's in my arms. She's blurry-eyed, wasted, fighting to keep her heavy lids open. I glance down. Blood seeps through the fabric of her flannel pants, both kneecaps bloodied. My jaw locks. Come on, Jane. I try to quicken our pace. When there's this much commotion, there may be hecklers not long after. Although a heckler with firecrackers started all of this, maybe he has friends coming for a round two. Maybe he wasn't a lone wolf. Maybe they're planning to hide in our house. God damn it. Walrus squirms in my left arm, digging his claws into my bare chest and trying to crawl up my shoulder. I yank him back down, not caring about the scratches. Paparazzi push into my face when I wrap my right arm around Jane's shoulders. I have to let go of her just to shove them out.
Back up,
I yell, not joking around. A lot do shuffle backwards, and then some don't give a shit about us. Swaying drunkenly, Jane almost falls again, her legs wobbling.
Janie.
Hold him. I give her Walrus, too. Recognition parts her lips, that two cats ran outside.
Merde.
We have to hope that none of the others sprinted out before Walrus and Carpenter. Jane holds her kittens in a fiercely protective grip. Quickly, I pick Jane up, wrapping my arm beneath her legs, the other supporting her back, cradling my best friend. The paparazzi go wild.
Right here, Maximoff! Jane, look here!
Fuck off. I can move three times as fast. Jane tucks her head into my chest because of the lights. Cameras only flash hotter, more incessant. And then, the paparazzi began creating a path, separating enough for a body to fit through. But not for us, for the towering 6'7" Italian-American bodyguard that bulldozes towards Jane and me. I squint, my vision impaired from the constant flashes, but I distinguished the longish, scruffy hair, unshaven jaw, and stern brown eyes of Thatcher Moretti, the lead of Security Force Epsilon. With his massive height and strong build, he creates a barrier between us and the media, making it 10 times easier to push through the masses. Thatcher clicks his mic on the collar of his black button-down.
I have them. Clear the street.
He spots Walrus wiggling in Jane's motherly grip. Thatcher grabs the kitten and tucks Walrus protectively under his arm, like a furry football. By the time we reach the front stoop of my townhouse, white lights dance in my eyes. I can count on my hands the number of times I've personally used the front door. 3. 3 fucking times. Because this insanity happens. As soon as the door shuts behind me, I register the sheer amount of people in my townhouse. All familiar faces from Alpha. They tape our window and sweep up glass, speaking into mics, scouring the rest of my home for intruders. I rest Jane on the love seat, still pushed against the archway. And Quinn rushes past towards the staircase. Quinn? Quinn, where's Pharaoh? I call out. He doesn't stop. So I chase after him, to the base of the stairs. Quinn! He pauses to glance back, his nose bloodied. What happened? Quinn opens his mouth, but Thatcher tells him.
Go, Quinn. No.
Fuck that. Where's Pharaoh? I yell, not fucking around. Quinn's jaw muscle ticks, but he rushes upstairs. I shake my head, pissed. I rotate on Thatcher, but he towers near Jane while she slowly rifles through a first aid kit for her bloodied knees. Thatcher barks orders.
I need eyes on all the cats.
He already places the calico kittens in their leopard print carrier, securing them.
We have Walrus and Carpenter. Where are Ophelia, Lady Macbeth, and Tootles?
Jane blinks drunkenly at him.
You know their names?
I glare at Thatcher. Where the fuck is Pharaoh?
Nothing.
No acknowledgement of my question. In the grand scheme of security, it's unimportant for me to be aware of my own bodyguard's whereabouts. I'm supposed to sit and let the extra security protect us. I'm not supposed to care about them. Not even if they get hurt. It's their job. I spot Price by the broken window. The Alpha lead chats to a younger security member. My phone vibrates angrily on the rumpled sleeping bags. All of my family must be freaked. My mom. I have to call her. Thatcher doesn't even answer Jane's question. The most strict, no-nonsense guy on the team. I swear I liked that about him, but now I'm fucking irritated. Thatcher holds his mic.
Jane, do you have any strays in the house?
She struggles with the gauze packet, and I go to help. He cuts me off and takes my place. Kneeling at the love seat, he tears open the gauze. I need to do something, but security loves to impede me from doing anything productive. I could scream, I'm so frustrated right now. I rub my face. Where's Pharaoh? Where's Pharaoh? Where's my... I stare fixatedly at the closed front door.
No strays?
Jane tells him, trying her hardest not to slur.
I did adopt another yesterday. Licorice. He's a 4-year-old, gray, long-haired, blue eyes.
Thatcher speaks into his mic.
There's a 6th cat. Licorice. Gray.
He presses the gauze to her knees, and Jane rips open a band-aid with her teeth. Thatcher tells my best friend.
Lady Macbeth, Tootles, and Ophelia are accounted for.
Jane nods, barely relaxing. The door opens, and my chest rises, thinking it's Pharaoh. But it's not. It's not him. It's Luna's bodyguard. Fuck this. I charge over to the Alpha lead. My gait is strong and determined. I've never shied from any of these men. Not for a damn breath. Not for a second. And they're going to answer me now. Price. My firm voice yanks his attention from the younger security member. I need to know where Pharaoh is, now. You should sit. No, you fucking tell me where my bodyguard is. This isn't up for discussion. Price clicks his mic.
Price to security. Someone give me an update on Pharaoh.
Right. Pharaoh never grabbed his radio before he ran outside. Price can't contact him directly. He stares far away.
Price to security, he repeats. Someone give me an update on Pharaoh.
I cross my arms over my chest, the weight killing me. I turn slightly and spot Akara descending the staircase. I frown, expecting Sully to be right behind him. The last image I have, he was with her. I was sure he was with her. Akara, I call out. Where's Sully? He walks tensely over.
She left.
He touches his earpiece, distracted. Then his focus returns.
She texted her dad halfway through the movie to come pick her up.
She felt a lot worse than she let on. Reich was here, then?
He nods.
I'm not surprised. Sully has a very close friendship with her dad and her mom. She tells them everything. If she felt dizzy or nauseous, she wouldn't have hesitated to call Reich.
He planned to stay and check on you and Jane, Akara explains. But it got chaotic, and he needed to get Sully out before paparazzi blocked the street.
Why aren't you with her? Akara looks upset, his face cut in severe lines.
I can't officially be on her detail since I've been drinking. Someone else is with Sol.
He touches his earpiece and takes a step towards the kitchen. Before he leaves, he pats my shoulder like, I'm glad you're okay. Hang in there. Hey, I say to him. Thanks. He nods.
It's just another shitty day, right?
Doomsday, I say, and a knot is in my throat. Remembering Pharaoh, Price repeats that same phrase for the fourth time. I'm close to searching outside for Pharaoh myself, which may worsen the situation, but if no one's going to find him, I will.
Price to security, he repeats, and then the front door opens. There he is.
I can't even relax at the news. Is he fucking hurt? Blares in my head. Pharaoh saunters inside, not casually. His muscles are taut. He locks the door behind him, and the moment he sees me, he almost rocks back, nose flared.
You went outside?
He hones in on my reddened cheek and my lip. I rub my mouth. It stings. The camera must have busted my lip open. I zero in on his bloody forearms. Skin scraped like he slid against pavement, all the way to his elbows. I grimace into a cringe, my muscles turning inside out, my heart in my throat.
Cats escaped, and Mafi went out to get them. Price explains briefly to Pharaoh. We need an update.
Pharaoh swallows hard, his face twisting the longer he looks at me, almost pained. He takes a step towards me at the exact same time I take one towards him. We pause. We stop. I've never wanted to embrace someone so much in my fucking life. Something wells inside my body. An emotion that I've never experienced.
Pharaoh, Price snaps.
I blink a few times, tearing my gaze off my bodyguard. Pharaoh combs both hands through his hair and rotates to the alpha lead.
Both guys are being booked tonight, Pharaoh says.
I go rigid.
You caught them?
I'm stunned. Hecklers, harassers, people who throw shit, who stalk us, they rarely ever get caught. These people are usually faceless, nameless humans. As nondescript as a Nanon online. I've lived my life content knowing that there'd be little retribution. I'm fine with that. I get it.
A few paparazzi tripped both guys,
Pharaoh says, more to me than to Price.
They slowed them down. I was able to tackle one guy and keep him down. Quinn grabbed the other and then the police came. I dealt with the cops. Quinn came back here already, right? He asks Price.
Price nods and tosses him his radio.
Keep the volume high.
Pharaoh attaches the radio to his belt. Jane has the first aid kit, I tell Pharaoh and motion to the love seat. I'm still eyeing his bloodied forearms. He's still scanning my face, even as he fits in his earpiece.
It's all yours,
Jane tells us, teetering as she stands, kneecaps bandaged. She raises her chin to meet Thatcher's gaze.
Have you located Licorice?
His hand hovers by her hip in case she falls.
We're working on it.
I hear his South Philly lilt.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Jane blinks like she's trying to battle her drunkenness. She hiccups and says,
Thank you, Mr. Moretti.
He's 27, the same age as Pharaoh. Not middle-aged.
Thatcher is fine, he tells Jane.
Is she blushing? Jane presses her lips together, then sways.
I should go call my parents.
Her gaze finds me.
Do you want me to call your mom, Muffy?
Please. She hiccups, teeters, and then, with her cat carrier in hand,
She tries to confidently ascend the staircase like Cinderella at a ball. She manages to reach the second floor safely, all without tripping. I would clap, but I concentrate on Pharaoh. We both sink down onto the love seat. I dig through the first aid kit, and he actually watches, not even making a comment about how he's the doctor. Thatcher drags the iron cafe chair over and sits directly in front of us, but he only acknowledges Pharaoh.
You should have grabbed your radio before you left the house.
Pharaoh leans back. I'm not apologizing for that. Thatcher glares.
You never apologize for anything.
I caught the guy.
The cat's escaped.
That has nothing to do with my fucking radio. Pharaoh sneers. Drop it, Thatcher. One time I asked Pharaoh which guy he hated the most on security. He didn't even hesitate before saying, Thatcher Moretti. Now I get it. His strictness is the antithesis of Pharaoh. I rip open antiseptic wipes. Was it a brick? I ask Thatcher, cutting into their tension. I motion with my head to the window. Security has sufficiently taped up a piece of cardboard over the cracked hole. Glass cleaned. Curtains closed. I'm trying to visualize the projectile.
Don't worry about it, Thatcher tells me.
Evasive. I've been reminded tonight that Thatcher is in the camp of Maximoff asks too many questions. Maximoff takes on too much responsibility. Maximoff isn't part of the security team. Remind him that any chance you can. I'm not learning about this online tomorrow, I say firmly. Was it a brick? A hammer? A goddamn UFO?
A baseball.
Pharaoh answers. Thatcher has a stern look that says, he didn't need to know. Thatcher is used to protecting Xander, who is guarded from facts that stoke his anxiety. But I'm not the same as my brother, and I'm 8 years older. I asked, I remind Thatcher. He nods slowly.
You're right.
Pharaoh's brows jump, and then he gestures for the antiseptic wipes.
Give me.
I hand them over, and he wipes the blood and gravel off his forearms, not even cringing. His pain tolerance has to be high. Evidence, every damn tattoo. Thatcher sits forward, hands cupped, eyeing me.
The team has a few questions we need to ask you.
All right. My shoulders square. I rip packets of gauze open for Pharaoh. He seems out of the loop on this pre-planned debriefing, probably because he hasn't been tethered to a radio. Thatcher asks,
Who bit you?
I go completely still.
What?
Pharaoh places his hand on my shoulder blade and examines my back. Thatcher clarifies,
Who gave you the two bite marks?
I glower, That's none of your fucking business. I've never shared my sexual history with the whole security team, not when Declan was my bodyguard, and definitely not now.
It's online already.
Thatcher passes me his cell phone. The screen popped up to Celebrity Crush's homepage. The first photograph shows me only in dark green boxer briefs on my street. In a second panel, they zoomed in on two reddish bite marks, one near the back of my neck, the other on my waist above the band of my underwear. The headline, Maximoff Hale caught with sexy bite marks. Is he into kink? Before I even digest this, I spot another headline, another photograph from tonight, and then a photograph from over 20 years ago. I don't blink as I read. Maximoff Hale wears green underwear like Reich Meadows. Great. I've been so damn careful about wearing green. I didn't exactly plan to run outside in my underwear tonight, or ever. I return the phone to Thatcher, not faltering. Regardless of the article, you don't need to know who bit me or who I'm sleeping with. None of that is your business. Thatcher turns to Pharaoh.
Where are the NDAs of everyone he's been intimate with while you've been his bodyguard?
Fucking Christ.
Because you filed zero.
There are no NDAs. Pharaoh doesn't even miss a beat, taking charge of the situation.
He's been with the same girl, and he's wanted to keep it private. The purpose of an NDA is to further protect his privacy.
Private from the security team, Pharaoh clarifies, maybe lying on the fly. It's a girl his parents wouldn't approve of. Thatcher looks to me. I nod once. Still pissed. I want the whole security team out of my bedroom now. Even my fake bedroom with a fake girl that I'm fake fucking and who's fake biting me.
Maximoff,
Thatcher says,
if she sues you, you're in for a nightmare. Whoever this girl is, it's much better to get her to sign an NDA. Your parents are understanding.
She won't sue me. I trust her. And that's all I have to say. I'm done. This conversation is over. If you have something else to ask me, go ahead. If it involves sex, don't even speak.
That was it.
Thatcher stands and then stares down Pharaoh.
Anything happens to him, it's on you.
Loud and clear, Pharaoh says, not breaking their shared glare.
It's not on Pharaoh. I'm responsible for my own actions, my own life. If I step into quicksand, I wouldn't blame anyone but me.
25. Pharaoh Keen. I finish bandaging my arms, and Maximoff goes to check on Jane and make a few family calls upstairs. We can't speak, not with security everywhere. For a full hour, I rehash tonight's events to the Triforce in numb detail. Then, they let me go. Find Maximoff. It's all I've wanted to do. Find Maximoff. Find him. Be with him. I head to the staircase, passing three Alpha bodyguards. They pat my shoulder and tell me, good job, another says, quick hands. They congratulate me because the guy I pinned to the cement had a handgun on him. I had to disarm him, and most of SFA believes the two guys could have easily made a U-turn to Maximoff and Jane's townhouse if they weren't caught. I ascend the narrow staircase, my head whirling, and not because of booze. Nothing could have sobered me faster than tonight's misadventure. I reached the second floor. The bathroom door cracked. Maximoff has a hand on the sink, his phone to his ear. I love you too. I know, Mom. I lean on the doorway while he finishes his call, and his forest greens melt against mine. His bottom lip is split, his cheekbone starts to bruise, and beneath his eye, a reddish-purple tint forms, almost like he was punched. My stomach twists in brutal knots, and a rock wedges in my throat. I separated the bodyguard part of myself for one moment, and it hit me full force tonight, that I'm seriously falling for someone whose life is threatened daily, unconscionably, more than an actor, more than most celebrities. He's American royalty, fame from birth, a type of notoriety that incites hatred and disbelief, where people shout, why are they famous? Where people decree undeserving. Where pranks leave scars and threats verge on crimes and the cost could be lives. And I care about him. Shit, I care whether he's hurt or in pain or if he needs me. Unfavorable opinion time. I wish he would have let the cats die. And then I don't. Because he wouldn't be Maximoff Hale if he didn't run after the little bastards. He wouldn't be Maximoff Hale if he didn't care about Jane and his entire family. He wouldn't be the guy I can't stop staring at, can't stop thinking about. He'd be someone else. Someone that I would have never even thought to kiss. I promise, he says into his phone. Night. He hangs up, and I slip into the bathroom. I shut and lock the door behind me. Our eyes never detach, and our arms immediately wrap around each other. I hug him to my chest as much as he hugs me. I cup the back of his head with my hand. His palm warms my neck, and his pulse pounds against my body. He inhales, his carriage rising. My eyes burn, but I try to breathe, deep and strong. 2 minutes must pass before we lean back, only just slightly. I hold his sharp jaw. We kiss gently, and then we pull further back, studying one another for a brief moment. His eyes are bloodshot. I wonder what it must be like to be in his head. Paranoid, I'm guessing. Thoughts moving a mile a minute, not slowing. For anything. Are you okay? I ask him finally. He nods once. Are you? Because I thought something seriously fucking terrible happened to you. No one could get a hold of you, and I saw Quinn and... He swallows hard. I'm okay. My brows knot. You know what I did tonight is just part of my job? He licks his lips slowly. So you don't want me to care about you? No. I lower my voice. You just need to know that I'm going to get banged up and you can't run and save me, Wolf Scout. You have to let it happen. Maximoff daggers a glare to the ceiling, then the mirror. It finally sinks in for him, too, that I'm allowed to protect him, but he can't protect me. Not in the same way. We can't all be heroes. I say matter-of-factly. His glare falls to me, but his lips inch bit by bit, our arms still hooked tight around each other. If I'm not the hero, what am I? Maximoff is waiting for me to call him a villain. In his comic books, that's the dichotomy, heroes versus villains. He's very far from one. I press my lips to his jaw, his neck, and against his ear. I whisper, "You're a prince who wants to be a knight." 26. Pharaoh Keen. Maximoff swims like a bird cutting through air, graceful and effortless, made to fly. In a matter of seconds, he crosses the whole length of the indoor pool. I lounge on the edge of the diving board, one leg hanging off, my other foot on the board. Water rolls off my chest, black swim shorts wet, and even though we're alone, I'd still be hooked on Maximoff if the pool were jam-packed. I have a perfect view when he switches to the butterfly stroke. Returning to my side of the pool, his grace transforms into power. His strong arms extend and then dig deep into the water, pulling half his chest and head above the surface. Damn, my cock stirs. Maximoff is known for his great butterfly technique. He started swimming really young, competed at junior levels first, then older with regional and national competitions. Security gossips often about how he could have qualified for an Olympic trial, but he didn't do it, didn't even try. He chose to throw himself into his career, into charity work. Every time he swims, I'm just reminded of how big his heart is. Maximoff reaches my end, and instead of swimming another lap, he grabs onto the side of the diving board and does a pull-up with one arm. He yanks off his goggles and his cap, brown hair sticking up every which way. It's cute as fuck. "You ready for round five?" he asks, his chest rising and falling heavily like he ran a marathon. "We've already raced four times. Yeah, I lost all four. No, my ego doesn't bruise that easily." My mouth stretches. "How about you catch your breath first? Afraid of losing?" He smiles like he bested me. "No," I say. "I'm afraid I'm a bad influence. Hubris isn't a good look on you," I also add. "And I'm still taller, right now and every day. By one damn inch," he tries to hoist himself up higher, just to make a point, but I push his chest, hard enough that he falls back into the water. I can't stop laughing when he breaches the surface with two middle fingers. Then he captures my dangling ankle and yanks me into the pool. Shit. I dunk below, the water glowing blue in the darkly lit room. I breach the surface with a growing smile. Maximoff treads water, facing me. His wet hair is darker, almost closer to his natural color. We don't touch yet. My gaze pings to the security cameras. We're at the Hale Co. high-rise. The office is closed for the night. He's the son of the CEO, so he has his share of perks, like getting access to the indoor pool after hours. It helps that HMC Philanthropy's main offices are in this building. Maximoff rarely pulls strings for himself, but whenever I see the look on his face when he dives into the water, it makes complete sense why he chooses to open the pool. I swim to the corner of the 10-foot deep end. The only blind spot. I've been in Hale Co.'s security room and looked at the cam footage. I'm 100% positive. Maximoff follows. The second we reach the corner, we explode. His mouth crushes against my mouth, rough and strong, like he saved energy for this sweltering moment. Submerged in the pool, water droplets bead and drip down our temples and jaws. Wet but hot. So fucking hot. His rock-hard body screams closer and more, bucking against me. Damn. Damn. This guy could fuck me all day. I grip the tile to edge and use my build to pin Maximoff to the corner. His head tilts back, arousal trying to turn his eyes. He groans with a sharp breath. "Fuck." I whisper rough in his ear. "Did you like that?" He responds with a hard kiss, his skilled tongue parting my lips. I massage his cock above his red knee-length speedo, his erection growing beneath my palm. Fuck, I'm throbbing. Beneath the water, lit by a soft blue pool light, he clasps my muscular waist, and he flips us, pinning my shoulders to the corner. His chiseled build pushes up against mine, and my hand roams the carved ridges of his abs. Maximoff slows down, his breath deepening, and I watch him trace one of my tattoos with his fingers. Near my collarbone, a blood-red sparrow flies through the mast of a grayscale ship. He's looking at me like I'm the treasured celebrity, as though I'm the most valuable one. I skim the faint bruise on his sharpened cheekbone. I hate seeing you hurt. And I'm not the only one. After the firecracker incident last week, all of his younger cousins and two of his siblings approached me at a